From Washington, this is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, airstrikes kill three top Islamic State leaders. More than 100 people test positive for the HIV virus in a Cambodian village. And the current scandal involving comedian Bill Cosby shocks Hollywood.
In my opinion, if he's accused of sexual harassment, he has to address it for me. He owes me that.
It's all ahead. I'm Sarah Williams. U.S. military officials say more than 1,300 airstrikes and a stronger Iraqi security force is having a significant effect on the ability of the Islamic State group to operate in Iraq. A senior defense official confirmed Thursday the deaths of three top Islamic State leaders. VOA's Jeff Selden has more from the Pentagon.
U.S. and coalition airstrikes that began in August are leaving a mark on the Islamic State's leadership. According to a senior defense official, in just the last month or so, taking out the group's number two official in Iraq, its military emir in Iraq, and the emir of Mosul. The announcement followed an optimistic assessment by the commander of the Combined Joint Task Force for the operation known as Inherent Resolve.
Daesh has been halted and transitioning to the defense and is attempting to hold what they currently have.
Referring to the Islamic State by its Arabic acronym, U.S. Lieutenant General James Terry says airstrikes clearly have taken a toll.
They're having a hard time in terms of communicating right now, in terms of resupply.
He says that's hurting the Islamic State's ability to push out propaganda, recruit new fighters, and even spread fear.
You can go to the social media and see some of the stuff that's coming out of places like Mosul in relationship to the inability of the self-declared caliphate to govern populations out there.
Not all analysts agree with Terry's assessment. Jane's Intelligence Review concluded last week airstrikes have not caused any significant change in Islamic State operations, nor have they degraded the group's offensive capabilities. But in Sinjar, where coalition air support has been backing Kurdish fighters, there's optimism. With the help of our friends and the alliance, we will evict them from all Iraq, says this Peshmerga colonel. Coalition officials remain cautious, and the challenge remains of bringing more of Iraq's Sunni tribes back into the fight on the side of a government that once alienated them. There are also questions about the Islamic State's hold in Syria, where U.S. plans to find and train a moderate opposition force have yet to get underway. All in all, America's Lieutenant General Terry says the fight has a long way to go.
I still think we're, in terms of building some of the capabilities that are required there, probably about 3 years down the road minimum.
Jeff Selden, VOA News, the Pentagon.
Russia's President Vladimir Putin has said Russia's sinking economy will not only recover but become stronger, despite falling oil prices and Western sanctions over Ukraine. VOA's Daniel Scharf reports from Moscow.
During his annual news conference Thursday, Mr. Putin had optimistic words for the Russian people. Despite falling oil prices, the weak ruble, and an expected recession, he said the economy would recover and emerge stronger.
The economy will inevitably adapt to the environment of low energy prices. It will necessarily be diversified. And second, even if we believe that energy prices will remain low or become even lower, there will inevitably be a point in time when they will start rising again with global economic growth and rising energy demand. And I have no doubt this will happen.
The Russian president sought to reassure an increasingly worried public who are flocking to shops to buy big-ticket items ahead of inflation.
Everybody is saying prices are going to rise. I'm afraid of taking a wrong step, so I decided to buy myself a television.
Some shoppers called the economy and the falling ruble a nightmare. But retiree Valery was more optimistic.
It's a temporary phenomenon. I think everything will return to normal after a little period of time. It's just a political fuss.
Economists warn the central bank's raising of interest rates to stabilize the Russian currency will further stifle growth. Ruslan Grinberg, the director of the Institute of Economics at the Russian Academy of Sciences, says a new economic team is needed that can deal with crisis as well as tough currency controls.
Сегодня мы наблюдаем стремительный обвал Today we can see a sharp fall in the ruble, and it's already not connected to oil prices. It's already its own story. Panic is setting in. Panic is the mood. In order to stop this, in my opinion, administrative control is the only option.
But Mr. Putin gave no indication of any dramatic change in policy to deal with the contracting economy.
We do not attack anyone. We only defend our interest and the dissatisfaction of our partners. First of all, the Americans, not with us taking steps that provoke tension in the security field.
He also brushed aside criticism of Russia's actions in Ukraine that sparked Western sanctions. Meanwhile, Russian police arrested about 20 people outside the news conference venue for protesting without permission. Daniel Scherf, VOA News, Moscow.
Well, meanwhile, European Union leaders are wrapping up the year with a summit that focuses on two key problems that have dogged the European Union for much of 2014, the crisis in Ukraine and the region's struggling economy. From Paris, Lisa Bryant reports for VOA. The meeting comes as the bloc agreed to new sanctions against Russian-annexed Crimea.
Thursday's agreement to toughen EU sanctions against Crimea came just hours before leaders gathered in Brussels for their last summit of the year. Russia annexed the Ukrainian territory in March. The new EU measures will ban all investment and restrict trade in Crimea, and even ban EU cruise ships from visiting Crimean ports. They are just the latest in a series of punitive measures enacted by Europe and the United States this year over the crisis in Ukraine. Before the meeting, the new EU president, former Polish Prime Minister Donald Tusk, said the summit should send a strong signal of Europe's support for Ukraine, including financial support.
For sure. We will not find a long perspective, long-term solution for Ukraine without adequate and consistent, both tough and responsible strategy towards Russia. For me, it's clear that modern, stable, independent Ukraine will be and must be foundation of this new strategy.
Russia expert Kadri Leek, a senior policy fellow at the European Council on Foreign Relations in London, said sanctions are only one element of a larger strategy needed to change the behavior of Russia and of its president, Vladimir Putin.
The chief question still is to take the sanctions tool and craft it into a tool for policy. Because right now, we have sanctions that are working, but we don't really have meaningful strategy behind them.
She says that strategy should not only include ensuring Russia respects the Minsk ceasefire agreement with Ukraine, but deal more broadly with Russia's effort to carve out a sphere of influence at the expense of its neighbors. Addressing Europe's economic woes is another top agenda item. Leaders are expected to agree on a $390 billion investment plan as one solution. Again, EU President Donald Tusk.
The economic situation has improved since the outbreak of the crisis, but we are not safe. It's obvious, of course. Today, we need more investments, more structural reforms, and sound public finances across Europe.
The new investment plan was proposed by European Commission Chief Jean-Claude Juncker and has broad support. It aims to generate private investment in infrastructure projects as a way to revive regional growth and cut unemployment and public debt. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
There are now more than 110 people in a single Cambodian village who have tested positive for the human immunodeficiency virus, or HIV. The cause of the village's large number of infections and the source of transmission has not been determined. More from VOA correspondent Steve Herman in our Southeast Asia Bureau in Bangkok.
Health authorities say tests administered in the past 11 days on hundreds of worried villagers have found a surprisingly high percentage of them to be carrying HIV. The Cambodia Country Director of UNAIDS, Marie-Odile Edmond, says those residing in Roca Commune in Battambang Province are not in a high-risk category.
Among the general population, as we call it, there won't be too many cases suddenly detected, so it's an unusual situation.
The Pasteur Institute in Phnom Penh confirmed to VOA News that those in the village had tested positive for HIV-1, the most common and pathogenic strain of the deadly virus. The tests were administered as police began questioning an apparently unlicensed doctor. Many of those residing in the village, which has a population of 8,900 people, are blaming the man they thought was a trusted physician with spreading the virus through recycled needles. Edmond, the UNAIDS country director, says it is premature to draw any conclusions as to how the virus spread.
I'm not able to comment on that because I think we have to wait for the findings of the investigation, interviewing both that person, but also all the people from the community who have come for testing, the practice at that facility, but also the behavior.
Cambodia's Prime Minister Hun Sen, during remarks at a graduation ceremony in the capital Thursday, questioned the test results. He said the infected villagers might have a virus, but it's not AIDS. He also questioned, in defiance of accepted medical knowledge, how the young or elderly could have the disease, which can be spread through blood transfusions, injections with previously used needles, or the exchange of bodily fluids during sexual contact. A deputy provincial police chief is quoted by domestic media saying that new and used needles were found together during a search of the house of the medical practitioner. The man, who is in his 50s, has been detained by police, but has not been charged with any crime. Steve Herman, VOA News, Bangkok.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's voanews.com. Online news for a changing world.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. President Obama's announcement this week that the United States will restore full diplomatic relations with Cuba and ease monetary and other restrictions on Cuba was met with optimism and some caution in New York City, where many Latin Americans live, including several thousand Cuban Americans. VOA's Adam Phillips reports.
Thursday was a cold morning in New York City, but Alex, who originally hails from a Central American country not far from Cuba, was feeling warm-hearted when he saw yesterday's news on TV.
What was going on with Cuba before I was born, 50-some years ago, I don't know too much about, but obviously it's a good thing to try to get people together, you know? I mean, again, I saw all those people celebrating, how happy they were. I said, wow, this has to be good, you know? I mean, they're Cuban. If they think it's good, who are we to say no, it's not, you know? As Obama said last night, he said, listen, it hasn't worked. Whatever we've been doing, it hasn't worked. So it's time to try something different. Everybody is going to smoke them Cuban cigars legally. That makes me feel good to see people enjoy themselves.
Catherine was on Fifth Avenue for a mid-morning cigarette break. She resents the Cuban regime in spite of what she sees as its self-interested willingness to liberalize its relations with the U.S.
I do think that it's ridiculous that Cuba doesn't let people come out of their country, not even to vacation in the United States, and also that we're not allowed to go over there. It's a beautiful country, and the people are beautiful, and they risk their lives to come here every single day. I think that this should be allowed to have more freedom in their speech when they want to talk, to the fact that they're not even allowed to use the internet.
What do you think then about the president's move to allow it to become more liberal back and forth?
I think that's great.
Cuba-born Alex Derribes, who came to the United States in 1966 as a boy, takes a skeptical view of Cuban President Raul Castro's intentions.
You know, from the past when he's shown this open forum that he gives, but then he doesn't give up anything. There's always, you know, room for improvement. You always want to try, open up the gates and see what happens.
Derribes says his family has many decades of mistrust and even hatred to overcome.
Yeah, for what he did, the country, for what he's doing to the country, just the communism. When I was little, going to school, it was, you know, the uniform and singing, you know, communist songs before you start classes, and everything was communism, communism, communism. That's why we came here, because my mom didn't really want us living up like that. So hopefully it'll turn out better, but, you know, we'll see. To start,
New Yorkers always like an opportunity and a bit of pleasure, and that can influence their political views. Pete Tierney exports solar energy equipment.
I mean, I think it's time. You know, Fidel's long gone. I think it's time, and I would love to see if we could export some solar equipment to Cuba. And they have beautiful sun, beautiful country. Plus, they have beautiful old American-made cars there.
A sample of reactions from everyday New Yorkers to the news that U.S. President Barack Obama and Cuba President Raul Castro will normalize diplomatic relations between their two nations. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
More than 20 women have accused comedian Bill Cosby of sexual misconduct. The comic denies the accusations and has not been charged. But as VOA's Mike O'Sullivan reports, the scandal has tarnished his reputation and shaken Hollywood.
Some of the accusations are more than a decade old, but in recent weeks, one woman after another has alleged that Bill Cosby drugged, raped, or sexually abused them when they were young women or teenagers. Accuser Beverly Johnson, a former model, spoke to ABC News.
I knew I had been drugged, and I had been drugged really good.
Authorities say the alleged offenses happened too long ago to prosecute. Cosby, now 77, denies the accusations, but has otherwise said little.
There is no comment about that.
Hollywood columnist Brian Lowry of the publication Variety says the scandal has gained momentum.
I think a lot of people, even initially, who might have said, well, this is one or two people and maybe they're trying to shake him down for money, when that starts to get to be 10, 12, 15, close to 20, then you start to wonder how many people could really be making it up or getting into it for those kinds of reasons.
Los Angeles stand-up comic Tehran Von Gosry grew up watching Cosby on television and viewed him as an icon. He thinks the performer needs to speak out.
In my opinion, if he's accused of sexual harassment, he has to address it for me. He owes me that.
Von Gosry says celebrities like Cosby should be held to a high standard because of their influence, especially on young African Americans like him.
Or millions of kids are looking up to you. You are a role model, whether you want to be or not.
Gosry's friend, criminal lawyer Alale Kamran, says Cosby has been unfairly convicted in the public mind without any evidence.
Legally speaking, he has not been charged. And as long as he's not charged and he's not convicted, he's an innocent man and he should be regarded as such.
This is one of many recent scandals that has shaken the world of entertainment in the United States and Britain. British icon Jimmy Savile, who died 3 years ago, has been the subject of hundreds of allegations of sexual attacks on women and children. British police called Savile a predatory sex offender. But another British celebrity, television actor Michael Lavelle of the long-running series Coronation Street, was accused and last year acquitted of raping a child. Cosby's accusers are unlikely to get their day in court because of statutes of limitations on criminal conduct. But Brian Lowry says that, innocent or guilty, the scandal is now part of Cosby's legacy.
He won't just be someone who starred in one of the most popular television shows of all time, who was an enormously popular stand-up comic, who was active into his 70s, and all the things that you might say about him. His legacy will forever bear this mark.
Lowry says that if Cosby is innocent, he has failed to address the charges effectively. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
A Japanese scientist who claimed a major breakthrough in stem cell research has resigned after the government lab where she worked could not replicate her results. Haruko Obakata said in a statement today that she was leaving the Riken Center for Developmental Biology after the lab concluded the stem cells she said she had created probably never existed. Rather than admit to fraud, Obakata said she was exhausted and extremely perplexed that her research could not be duplicated. She had initially been praised for leading the research that raised hopes for discovery of a simple way to grow replacement tissue. Well, thanks very much for joining us today for International Edition. Remember, you can get the latest breaking news and analysis on global events 24 hours a day on our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington.
This is Today in History. On December 19, 1777, during the American Revolutionary War, General George Washington led an army of about 11,000 men to Valley Forge, Pennsylvania, to camp there for the winter. The conditions were severe and disease took hundreds of lives, but as the winter passed, the Continental Army regrouped, and at the direction of Baron von Steuben, a former Prussian general, the Americans emerged a more proficient fighting force. On this day in 1871, American author Samuel Clemens received a patent for a strap attached to the back of shirts and fastened with buttons to keep clothing in place. It was one of three patents the author received. Under the pen name Mark Twain, Clemens wrote two famous American novels, The Adventures of Tom Sawyer and Huckleberry Finn. In 1907, 239 miners were killed in a coal mine explosion at Jacobs Creek, a town in western Pennsylvania. In 1932, the BBC World Service began broadcasting as the BBC Empire Service. In 1941, on this date, German dictator Adolf Hitler became the supreme commander-in-chief of the German army. In 1946, forces of Vietnam's communist leader Ho Chi Minh attacked French colonial forces in Hanoi. That attack is seen as the opening salvo of a war in which the French would lose their Southeast Asia territory. On this day in 1967, Australian Prime Minister John Holt was presumed dead after disappearing 2 days earlier while swimming at sea. In 1998, President Bill Clinton became only the second president in U.S. history to be impeached, formally accused of unlawful activity, by the House of Representatives. The Senate later found him not guilty of charges of perjury and obstruction of justice. I'm Dave DeForest with VOA's Today in History.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States supports the right of the Haitian people to go to the polls to determine their future. Elections are essential for Haiti's democratic development and for continued progress in post-earthquake reconstruction and development. Haiti's political leaders are working to resolve the issue of delayed elections. On December 14th, Haitian President Michel Martelly accepted the voluntary resignation of Prime Minister Laurent Lamothe. This action was part of President Martelly's decision to agree to a series of steps recommended by an 11-member presidential advisory commission that both sides could take to help resolve the issue of delayed elections. Prime Minister Lamothe's announcement of his resignation, said U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry in a written statement, is evidence of the Haitian executive branch's commitment to resolve the situation. The U.S. commends the work of Haiti's Presidential Advisory Commission, which President Martelly established on December 1st, and welcomes its recommendations as a basis to encourage consensus. The United States also commends President Martelly for his courageous efforts to resolve the deadlock and for his decision to accept the Commission's recommendations. Haiti's parliamentary and political leaders also have worked in earnest to maintain the integrity of Haiti's democratic institutions. Recognizing the concessions made by all sides to resolve the impasse, the United States urges all parties to reach without delay a definitive agreement on all outstanding issues and to carry out that agreement in good faith. Too much progress has been made since the earthquake to risk going backwards now, The future of that progress is in the hands of Haiti's leaders, and the United States urges them to negotiate a solution that will open the door for elections to be scheduled as soon as possible.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.